flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, guys. Dave Glover Show, a few minutes past 4 p.m. We welcome back to the show mental skills coach, former Cardinal, and the author of 90% Mental, Bob Tewksbury. Tewks, great to talk to you again, my friend.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. I'm wondering right off the bat if your toughest assignment was managing Kevin Wheeler in the fantasy camp.
Oh, there's no managing me. He knows that. You just put up with me, right?
I just toleration is the key to being a fantasy camper, and low expectations and high tolerance is a prerequisite for the fantasy camp.
Yeah, I think the strategy too, Bob, is that you guys, the former players, the guys that are running things, you tolerate us because I think we amuse you, because it's just so funny watching us do the things that you guys were actually good at.
Yeah, and also makes us sad that someone can be that, you know, athletic but have no talent. We shake our head wondering what the hell you guys are doing here.
Like, why are you even trying?
Yeah, just go home.
My best advice is go
home. We're too old to watch bad baseball shit.
Yeah, you know? What's great too, obviously the people that haven't been a part of it, like, and I know we won't spend a lot of time on this, but the best part of it is these morning meetings where basically it's just a roast where it's the managers of each team, and Bob was the manager of the team that I was a part of. Although at the time you had to miss a couple of days, if I remember correctly, because you had some meetings when you were with the Red Sox. So we got Bruce Sutter as our interim manager, and then we got our manager back in Bob Tewksbury. But the meetings are the greatest, where it's just a giant roast, and you can't bring your cell phone into the meeting. Let's just put it that way.
No, well,
not allowed.
Bill Pfeiffer and Scott Terry and all the people that put that together in Cardinal Nation, Larry State, you know, they do a great job making this fun for everybody, and it's been thrilled to be part of that over the last few years.
Bob, what sort of help did they have for you guys back when you were pitching? That's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, so when my wife now, Laura, we've married 36 years. Griffin was born at Creve Coeur Hospital in St. Louis, so he's a St. Louisan. But my rookie year with the Yankees, Laura and I were dating, and I was struggling, and she's just like, well, go in and talk to Lou Piniella. And I'm like, are you out of your mind?
The last thing I'm going to do.
He might fight you.
What am I going to tell him? But now, you know, there wasn't anything then, but, you know, the trainers, Brad Henderson, Gene Gieselman, a couple of Anheuser-Busch products, and you tried to solve your problems. But But there was nothing like that then, and but I'm glad that there's resources now available for the players.
Yeah.
I mean, you there were people doing things like sports psychology, which is what it used to be called. It's definitely, you know, more mental skills now. It's a little bit more of a positive twist on it, because I think more people will buy in because they don't think of it as having some kind of connotation. But I wouldn't say that you were ground floor, Bob, but you certainly were early on in it being like getting into this with teams, where teams are accepting it and saying, not only do we want to embrace this, but we want to employ someone to handle this for us.
Yeah. Well, you know, Harvey Dorfman and Ken Revisa were kind of the pioneers in this. Charlie Marr with Cleveland. And, you know, Chad Bowling with the Yankees and others, and Chad's still there. But so we formed a group of mental skills coaches working in baseball, and I think there was only six of us at the time.
Right.
And now I think every team has one, and there are different titles, but essentially it's a resource for the players that have wasn't there before, and hopefully the players utilize that. It's one thing, like you said, it's the title and to not scare anyone off, but it's also the trust of working with someone who, you know, that's the key part, is forming your relationship. And that takes time. So it's a process.
So, Bob, obviously all the players are individuals. They have individual situations. But do you see the same type of thing come up over and over again?
Yeah. You know, if you have a bad day, then they feel bad and they have a good day. And so this is the degree of which things. When I first came up with the Cardinals, you know, trying to survive there, if I had a good day, it's like, Laura, we're going to Ruth's Chris. We're going to eat good. and if I pitched poorly, we went to McDonald's. So that's kind of the variance. But it's confidence related. It's people that, you know, remembering that confidence is on a continuum. There's good days and bad days. Bad days, if you pitch poorly or play poorly, doesn't mean you're a bad player. It means you had a bad day. And learning to separate the player from the person, that's a big challenge.
How much have you noticed any, I don't want to say change. Change might not be the right word. But any added pressures that have been related to younger players who obviously are big on social media, which was not a thing 10, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, all of the young guys are now, right? All the kids that are in the minor leagues, some of the younger players, they're on Instagram, they're on making TikTok videos, they're showing their training stuff in the offseason. Do you find that that's an added problem, or are they just, it's like part of their world and they're used to it and they accept it?
Well, that opens up a big conversation, but I think that, well, back to, you know, the mental skills now at the big league level, and it trickles down, so getting the buy-in from players starts at the low levels now, so which is good, because it used to start at just the higher levels and or just be at the lower levels and not available for the other players. So that's more readily available. But social media is a huge distraction. I encourage players to get off Twitter, get off all that stuff, because it's distracting. And if you read something bad about you, that becomes personal and you think about it. And if you read something good, then, you know, that's great, but, you know, what happens when it's bad? So I think it's a big distraction, although I do think they've grown up with it. It's part of their culture, and it's hard to separate them from that. But, you know, I'm old school. I think the fewer distractions you have, the better focus you have. I think it's a big, big deal that takes away from what you're trying to do.
Talking to Bob Tewksbury here, former Cardinal. Bob, has it hurt your enjoyment of the game to watch players who you're not working with and see them struggle and think, either I could help that guy or I know what that guy is going through?
Well, not really. I mean, I have to say I don't watch a lot of baseball now. I only have a couple of big league clients, which kind of surprises me just based on the work that I've done. But that's okay. You know, I have a lot of minor league players, and I can follow them on through the internet if I need to. But I don't watch a lot of it. I do know that it's underutilized. You know, people spend more time working on physical and fundamental aspects of their game, and not enough on the mental part. And I think that that is an area all players can improve on and seek help for should they need it.
It is a fascinating change when I look at, because I work with young players too in my free time, Bob, and it's definitely a big part of trying to plant the seeds of those things, because none of us are trained like you, right? None of the people that, you know, we may have your book, we might have 90% mental sitting around the facility, and we you know, offer it to players, things along those lines, but that's more something you have to take on your own, right? It's, you can be guided to it, you know, the old, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right?
It's very, it has to be intrinsic. You have to want to do it, and you have to take down any biases or stereotypes or anything that you have, because it's researched. It's empirical evidence that shows that these techniques work. And I just think a lot of players don't look that way. You know, I always tell players, change happens from the inside out. And until you look in the inside, you don't really know what the issues are.
Bob, how applicable is your work to the corporate world or just the world outside of sports?
It's very applicable. I actually spoke at Novo Nordisk in Seattle to the scientists and the technicians and everyone that, you know, they talked about dealing with failure because they're trying so much to create new product and they do a lot for diabetes and all that. And so dealing with failure. So it's very applicable. I think the stuff that mental skills consultants or coaches or sports psychologists teach are life skills just built in around the sport that the person plays. It's self-talk, it's focus, it's having realistic expectations, controlling what you can control. I mean, it's just in a different venue that it's taught.
It's a good way. It's a fascinating way to think of it, because as I go through, you know, we talk about it, Bob, guys that have been in sports their whole lives, how important lessons are from just playing, even if you're not good, even if you're just experiencing it, you know, little league, high school, whatever. The idea that failure is okay and it's normal because people are going to fail all the time. And I would say you obviously expand it to anything competitive, right? You're going to compete. Yeah. We just had a couple of people in who are, you know, actors, and they talked about, look, you're going to miss roles. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just part of the process. And without the losing, you're not going to have the background to work on, you know, handling adversity and maybe building off of that.
100%. Dealing with failure, setbacks, how you handle things, how you respond to any situation is within your control. And when you learn how to respond appropriately to challenging situations, things always tend to end better.
Yeah, it is. You know, we tend to overthink our own little universes, and I know players are like that. I was a bit like that when I was a young player too, where you're overthinking and every time you make an out, you get mad and you go back to the bench and you throw something or you kick something. And then over time, when you get older, or you hear someone like yourself explain it. And in college, we had somebody along those lines that kind of explained some of these things. Like, if you're going to get mad every time, you're going to be mad 80%, 90% of the time, because it's always, things are always going wrong.
You're going to be Greg Jeffries. That's who you're going to be.
Did you know, I know this is your second career and you've been in this as long as you're around Major League Baseball, maybe more by now. Did you know when you're playing that you thought I could do some of this type stuff or something along those lines? Because, I mean, it fits your personality so well.
No, thanks. I've always had an interest in it. There wasn't a lot of material back in the 80s when I came up about this. It's relatively a new field, but I've always been drawn to it, and I think that having known Harvey Dorfman as a player and really piqued my interest even more. And I know that I didn't want to coach on the field. I wanted to stay in the game, but I didn't really want to be back in uniform and traveling all the time. So, and I knew that there was a need. So I thought, well, let's see what happens. And I've been doing it 20 years now. So
worked out well.
It did.
Bob, is it antiquated or maybe at least ham-fisted to talk about being mentally tough? Like, I came up, I'm 60 now, I came up in athletics with rub a little dirt on it, suck it up, buttercup, that kind of thing. Or is that still applicable sometimes?
Well, I think it is sometimes. You know, look, the game has changed. You know, our society has changed. People have changed. And so I think that mental toughness is very individual. Some people act tough because they want people to think they're tough. And people might perceive that as toughness, but other people are very quiet and are very tough. And have a toughness that they don't display. So it's very individual. But mental toughness is just being able to deal with whatever comes your way successfully. You know, that's mental toughness. You know, this is happening to me. Okay, I can handle that. This is what I need to do. Instead of, oh, God, what's going to happen? And then you start to go down the fork in the road that fork Yogi bent the fork in, and then you're in trouble.
That's Bob Tewksbury. The book is 90% Mental. Bob, it's always great to talk to you. Hope everything's going well for you.
Very good, gentlemen.
Hope we see you soon,
everyone,
man.
And St. Louis. All right, take care.
Thank you, Bob.
He's the best. And by the way, I can't recommend the book enough. The 90% Mental, he co-wrote that with Scott Miller, who's also one of my favorites. But, I mean, if you're a young baseball player, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be a baseball player or an athlete.
Yeah.
You can definitely learn from this
book. I'm going to pick it up.
It is absolutely phenomenal, first rate. I mean, it's hard to find someone with dual expertise like this. Somebody that played baseball and, by the way, was really good for a long period of time. And then has been doing this, you know, for a long period of time. It's a hard thing to find the combo.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Not a lot of time for this topic, but RFK, one of the things he wants to do, there are so...
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So many hundreds of thousands of people on SNAP, you know, food stamps, and you can buy kind of whatever you want. There are a few restrictions, but you can buy soda and candy and chips and things like that. And he wants to do away with that so that you can only buy healthy food. So he doesn't want to subsidize people eating ultra-processed foods. The detractors say, hey, these are human beings. These are people. They're not just going to live on broccoli. Let them eat what they want to eat. Thoughts?
I think you have to take into account that a lot of times people live in a food desert too, to where they might not necessarily have access to like fresh fruits and vegetables all the time. I mean, that's just something to take into account. Even if you just want people to be eating healthy all the time, sometimes people don't have access to healthy food.
I saw one idea was to double the points that you say you have $100 worth of cash, food stamps, that if you buy healthy food, it's $200.
Oh,
which I thought was kind of a good idea.
That it, yeah. I mean,
incentivize as opposed to constrict.
I mean, it's important to keep in mind, based then that seems like an idea because healthy food is more expensive.
True.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's part of the question that I have about the process. I don't think it's crazy to put some restrictions, limits, you know, things like that, guidelines on it. I wouldn't make it absolute, though. I mean, like you said, they are humans. You're not treating them like, well, I mean, you are treating them like children if you do it that way. Another-